The economy in Thailand post-military coup.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California and is supported by Citrix GoToMeeting, connecting people in face-to-face online meetings so they can collaborate from anywhere. More at GoToMeeting.com.
From APM, I'm David Brancaccio via the BBC in London this week. We're following the economic aftermath in Thailand this morning, a day after the military there announced it has seized control. The BBC's Theo Leggett is covering the story.
Market's reaction to the coup in Thailand has so far been relatively muted. The main index in Bangkok did open sharply down, but later recovered most of its losses, while the currency, the baht, has eased a fraction against the dollar. The question now is whether the country often referred to as Teflon Thailand because of its ability to shrug off the effects of political uncertainty can take the latest upheaval in its stride. So far this year, the signs haven't been promising. The economy shrank by 2% in the first quarter as months of demonstrations and disruption took a heavy toll on consumer confidence. The military takeover should mean an end to widespread protests, but the nighttime curfew will disrupt some businesses, while TV footage of soldiers in the street is unlikely to help the country's tourist trade, which is worth $38 billion a year.
The BBC's Theo Leggett, thank you. More layoffs to report at the computer company Hewlett-Packard. As many as 16,000 more jobs will go. Quarterly profits were up, but revenue was ominously down. Now let's check the markets. Starting with the sound of the last open outcry financial market in Europe, the London Metal Exchange. Not computers, but people on three telephones at once, barking commands, throwing hand signals. Malcolm Leonard is head of trading for the firm INTL FC Stone at the exchange.
Tin is in the closeout period of the day. Tin will close officially in a couple of minutes' time. And that will be the end of trading on the open outcry floor. Then, though, we'll move into the closeout period of the next metal. Lead will close out next. Then you'll have nickel. Then we'll have zinc. Then we'll go copper. And then we'll have aluminium closing at 5 o'clock.
Stock markets. The FT 100 in London is down 0.3%. Dow, S&P and NASDAQ futures are up.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by United Healthcare, with information on doctors, treatment options, and cost estimates for patients to make educated health decisions, online at uhc.com. By MassMutual, a company that offers financial services designed to serve families with special needs, at massmutual.com/specialcare. And by Zillow, with homes for sale, historical pricing data, and photos all available on Zillow.com or on their mobile apps. Zillow, find your way home.
The U.S. Senate yesterday sent to the president a $12 billion bill to upgrade water and port infrastructure around the country. The White House's push for money for highways and bridges is still facing an uphill battle. Here in London, we're reminded just how tough it is to make a case for expensive infrastructure. 150 years ago, listen to the problem that some thought public works might fix here.
Volcanoes of filth, gorged veins of putridity, ready to explode at any moment. In a whirlwind of foul gas.
That's from 1863, from a writer, John Hollingshead, who'd witnessed cesspools overflowing around houses all over London. The quote's read by historian Paul Dobraschik, who has a new book called, indeed, London's Sewers. Why all the extra sewage back then? Blame the iPad of the time, that must-have cutting-edge consumer product known as the flush toilet. All that extra filth was soon rooted right back into the Thames, the great river of London, that is also the city's drinking water supply. Garbage in, garbage out.
A modern-day bioterrorist couldn't have devised a better scheme for poisoning the city.
Stephen Johnson is author of The Ghost Map, a book about the doctor who figured out the origins of the cholera epidemics that devastated London at the time. It wasn't putrid air, as just about everybody thought. It was sewer water mixing with drinking water that led to tens of thousands of deaths. But despite the heinous smell, the emerging epidemiology, and the sheer yuck factor, London still couldn't get its act together to fix the wretched infrastructure given the expense and the politics. Why, for instance, waste public works on poor city dwellers regarded as morally inferior? Here's a quote from The Economist magazine in 1848.
Suffering and evil are nature's admonitions. They cannot be got rid of, and the impatient attempts of benevolence to banish them from the world by legislation have always been more productive of evil than good.
More years came and went with the effluent slopping into the water supply until...
There was this kind of famous thing called the Great Stink of London when the Thames in a hot summer in 1858 just got so incredibly smelly and everyone was sitting there in Parliament just overwhelmed with the fumes coming from the river.
The Great Stink led officials to form an agency with the power to get things done. It also appropriated what was eventually about $8 billion in today's money to build a sewer system with features that rival the magnificence of the Eiffel Tower.
It's known as the Cathedral of Sewage.
The great Victorian sewers in London are still at work today.
Give about 30 seconds, your eyes will adjust.
This week, an intrepid team from Marketplace put on protective gear and went down into the sewer here. What you find there ranges from the sublime, someone spots a piece of jewelry, a ring, to the predictably gross.
This is wet wipes, sanitary items, contraceptives, cotton buds, face pads.
Thing is, the system was designed for what goes down the toilet and the sink, but doesn't cope well with runoff during a hard rain. The raw sewage mixes with the rainwater, and the overflow ends up in the river. Now that's gross and against environmental rules, so there is a plan.
It needs to be a large project because there is a large problem that we need to deal with.
What is it that you still need to build?
It's a 25-kilometre-long sewer. It's 7.2 metres in diameter, so you get three double-decker London buses side by side.
Phil Stride of the Thames Tideway Tunnel, a venture of the private utility company Thames Water. If regulators say yes, water customers will have to pay about $130 a year more to fund a deep new tunnel. Adjusted for inflation, the sewer upgrade will cost about the same as the original 1860s sewer system, the one that stopped all that stink and cholera. Is $8 billion a decent price to keep a great river clean and the sewage in control? We'll watch to see if the project gets the go-ahead in the coming weeks. Special thanks to our hosts this week, the BBC, especially the World Service Business Unit here in London. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Business news. It's not all banks and budgets and bottom lines, you know. At Marketplace, we think it could be lots of things.
The big trends are leather and lace.
I think that the studio knows that movie was a mistake.
I love torque like no one really should.
Oreos and milk.
I'm Kai Rizdon. Whether you need news or the numbers or just a little chuckle, we'll have it for you next time on Marketplace from APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.